7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 23 of Color of Magic, your magic podcast where we try to get people to pay more attention to those of us in the minority groups in the game. And so far, on 23 episodes, we're still running strong. I haven't lost them yet. I've got my buddy Brian Allen. How you doing, dude?
It's 23. It is the Michael Jordan episode of Color of Magic, if you will.
That's one way to look at it. Yep. That's one way to
look
at it.
Or if you're a baseball fan instead, you know, the Ryan Sandberg episode, I guess.
Ryan Sandberg doesn't have the same clout, man.
He doesn't. The Cubs fans. Got it.
Fair. I'm sure we're going to get hate mail from the Cubs fans, but, you know. So, with all this stuff going on, you know, kind of picking up from last week, how are you holding up with all this virus news and everything else that's going on?
It's just starting to occur to me how many comedy-related things are probably not going to happen for me this summer. So, yeah, it's, you know, and I get it. You know, it's I mean, I am certainly not under the illusion that my jokes are more important than human health, so.
Yeah, I guess you can't really do any stand-up gigs since every bar would fit, like, 150, 200 people. That's probably a bad sign.
Yeah, and murder mysteries are going to be kind of the same thing, you know, because that's, as you, I'm sure you saw, Broadway is canceling shows, so yeah, we're.
Yeah, I saw that.
Under no illusion that I was important as Broadway, so yeah, we're going to miss a few shows there, too.
Yeah, and here in Seattle area, obviously, well, the whole state of Washington at this point, practically, the three biggest counties, they've already started shutting down. Any events that are 250 people or larger are done, and that includes, like, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, religious ceremonies, you know, your weddings, whatever, like, there's none of those. And then smaller stuff, they're kind of discouraging, but they're not going to stop you from doing it. You can still freely go to the store and shop or whatever, so I'm not going to go hungry out here.
Are you stockpiling, or are you getting?
No, actually, here's the thing, like, we do a pretty good job just keeping stuff anyway. Like, we're obviously not like hoarders or preppers or anything, but like, I have a bunch of different stuff in my freezer. I have a bunch of dry goods that we can still make food with. I have chickens that make eggs, so I'll always have protein. So there's
exactly.
That.
And we are hoarders. My wife, as I've probably mentioned here before, is an extreme couponer. So yeah, our stocks usually tend to be pretty well stocked anyway.
The interesting thing is, you know, I'm spending more time dealing with magic projects and stuff, you know, getting things sorted, putting stuff on eBay, making video content. Speaking of, I literally, just before we started recording, loaded an episode on YouTube that is, I think I called it the LGS and Player Survival Guide, just to give some stores some tips on how to better keep their place clean, some things they could do to make it still comfortable for people to show up and make it easier for them to shop with short visits. And then also for players, like, hey, if you do have to go to a store, here's some things you should practice. Or if you're going to be playing with other people, here's some ways to kind of minimize the transfer of germs and stuff in the process. So it's not a long video. I believe it was like 6 minutes. So it's a quick watch. But yeah, definitely give it a shot. Go check it out. There's some good tips. Share it with your store. Share it with your friends that go to your local store. As much as I would like the hits on YouTube and get people to view it, I do think it is actual good information. And credit to Andy at Next Level The Gamers Den. They're in a small city here near here called Graham. I had happened to be thinking about this video. He had sent me a message on YouTube. And he was like, hey, if you want to come out to my store and film some stuff, we could brainstorm some things. And you can get all the footage out here. So it was cool. I went last night. We were there for about an hour and a half. We put some stuff together. And then I got it all edited this morning. So thanks to him and his store for sure for helping out with that.
All right. Sounds good.
So moving along, what did we learn this week? I need to get a cool sound bite for that, by the way. Yeah. I need to get some fun little ditty that we could play. So I'm going to go first here because it's this first thing is sad, but I am both surprised and not surprised by this. But I saw a couple of people on social media talking about their family's business that happened to be Chinese food restaurants. And apparently people are boycotting or not ordering from them. Not understanding that it's not like the food is literally imported from China to be cooked. That's not how it works. How it works. And they are American citizens. One of the people I know that posted is like a third generation, so it's not even new for him. And they're just struggling. So the only thing I would say is if you are going to order takeout or delivery, might as well make it Chinese food, because several of them aren't even going to be busy, so you'll get better service right now.
Exactly.
Give them a little bit of love. So what do you got, Brian?
I first of all got to come perfectly clean. I was talking to some people like, hey, what are we going to have? And somebody, you know, somebody shot down Chinese food because of that reason. And, you know, I didn't argue with them. I should have said something, and I didn't say anything. I let that go.
They're lucky I wasn't in a group, because I would have put my foot down and specifically tried to order Chinese food just because of that reason.
That's absolutely how I would say I should have handled it, and I did not. So, yeah, even sometimes I keep my big mouth shut, too, and I should not. Now, as what I learned this week, this is not a paid promotional endorsement, but the new Call of Duty Battle Royale Warzone came out this week. I know you're probably thinking, God, we need another Battle Royale, like we need, you know, more nonsense. But no, it's actually really well done. It's a definitely an all. If you hate, let's say Fortnite, just throw this game that people getting a lot of hate. The Call of Duty version is done really well. It's a lot of fun. Some different game modes. As I said, not sponsored by Call of Duty. And it's free, by the way. So if you try it and you hate it, hey, didn't cost you anything.
Okay. I mean, I'll admit, I see Call of Duty on something and I kind of just like, all right, I don't need to touch it. But yeah.
If you're one of those people that, because I'll be the first person to say, you don't need to buy it every year. It's like Madden. I say this is somebody that buys both and usually streams them every year. But yeah, you don't need to buy it every year. But this is actually, especially since it's free, try it, see if you like it.
Well, if nothing else, it's something else to do while you're, air quotes, working from home.
That so, too, yeah.
So let's get into some actual direct Magic news for this week. And I think the biggest news we have coming out of WotC was they made the decision. Well, I guess there's two. One, that Wizards of the Coast, like many companies up here, did actually send their employees home. All the ones that were able to work from home are doing so now currently. And they also made the decision to cancel several of the large upcoming events. And that's a little tough because, well, one, that obviously has implications for a lot of people financially. You know, people in the cities, you know, obviously Channel Fireball, anybody they were going to employ to be there, all of the commentary team, coverage people, you know, so that affects a lot. And I'm not saying, you know, WotC shouldn't do it. Obviously, it's the right call at this stage of the game. But it is something to think about. So from that level, I would say if you are a fan of these products, obviously they won't have tournament coverage for you to watch for the next few weekends. Try checking some of them out on social media. You know, several of them have podcasts, they stream, they have YouTube channels. I know for sure Megan and Maria with Good Luck High Five have stuff. The Limited Resources, that's a podcast you can go check out for Marshall and I think LSV. So that's a good one there. Like, all of these people have things that you can still support them and help put some money in their pocket while they're not able to go work these other big events. So I, being somebody who's new, I guess, relatively to content creation, I know how much work goes into it and how much time I'm putting in these last few weeks. Go give these people some love. That is the least we can do. You know, help them out. We can't do it for everybody, obviously. I mean, there's a lot of people that are not going to be working for these next few weeks that could probably use the money. These are people we know we can help that do directly make our lives more fun doing what they do. So just a thought. Now, as from the player's perspective, that's a whole different thing, you know?
Yeah.
Because one of the things I don't think I've seen a lot of discussion about is how this is going to affect this season. Because this was supposed to be like a half season to qualify people for the new MPL and Rivals League going into the first full big year. But if half of your season or year, I guess, the half year, gets cut short, we don't even know how that's going to play out. Because there's a lot of people that, like, say you're in Europe and you may only have real access to two or three Grand Prix or something, or a couple of major qualifiers. Well, in the next 2 months or so, a lot of those aren't going to happen. So are you, you're now just going to be at a disadvantage point-wise to be able to stay in the points race. So I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah, and it's like we're seeing it across so many competitive endeavors where, you know, how do you even begin to, you know, everything. NBA's canceled. NASCAR, I think, is going to try to go without fans for a couple of weeks. As golf, apparently, I mean, it's just, this is all uncharted territory for people.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing, too. That's a good thing to bring up, is we kind of need to have some patience with these companies and organizations. I think on some level, we do expect them to make, like, the money decision. But they are making decisions when, like, a weird time, too. Like, say you're the NBA, right? And the situation happened last night where just prior to the game, you find out one of the players is tested positive or whatever, right? That's not happened before. They don't know how to message that or the process for dealing with that. And not only that, like, funny thing is, I've been having these conversations off and on with my wife about, like, well, what about this? Or how would we handle? And then, ironically, I'd asked her that thing about, well, what do they do if a player comes down sick? Like, do you just shut down the league? Because my concern was that we know this has, like, a 2 week incubation period, right? So if we find out, like in this case, Rudy Gobert's tested positive, well, now we have to go back and see what teams and players and staff members and referees or whatever did he have any contact with in the past 2 weeks.
Because did you see what he did at one of the press conferences?
Yeah, which is hilarious, by the way.
Yeah, hindsight. I mean, what are the odds?
Dude just memed himself, which is great. For those of you that don't know, he was previously trying to make a scene about it's not that bad. So he was like touching all over this microphone and everything. And then he's the one who came down first in the NBA is testing positive.
Of all the people.
Yeah. Hey, you know, sometimes karma's hell, man.
Yeah. I like that Republican congressman that wore the gas mask while he was making fun of coronavirus legislation. And now he's in self-quarantine.
Also funny. Not funny that somebody's sick.
No.
But when you're being an ass, sometimes you deserve something silly to happen to you.
And not to even compare those two. Rudy Gobert was from a place that, like, he was just trying to make a joke about it, make light about it. Which I'm sure to some extent the congressman was too, but he was also kind of ridiculing the fact that we're even making the coronavirus bill. You know, like, this is ridiculous.
One of the things I think we have to pay attention to is what's making a lot of these decisions difficult, even in Wizards' case, is it's the spread of the whole thing that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't want to be responsible for somebody coming to one of your things, being a competitor or not, and then, you know, playing the 6 degrees of separation game.
Yeah.
Of how far did this travel or have it traced back to you. Because then I don't even know what, truthfully, I don't even know what legal implications would be from this.
I'm going to guess a lot of people don't know because, again, this is largely uncharted territory.
Yeah, like if Wizards decided to just move forward, they said, okay, let's say DreamHack. We were talking about that before the show, right? It's coming up in Dallas in, what, a month and a half or something?
Yeah, I believe so.
So let's say they decided, okay, we're still going to support this event, still going to go on, whatever. We're still going to give them full thing. We're going to promote it, put stuff on the website, encourage people to go. And then let's say that is the new ground zero in Texas. And a bunch of the infections or whatever trace back to that convention. Like, what happens then? Like, are they held in negligence because they knew it was a possible thing, but they did it anyway? Even though a lot of people hadn't tested positive? Or who's responsible? Is it them or the convention? Or, like, I don't even know.
If you got $100 and a lawyer, you can sue anybody for just about anything in this country.
Sure. I mean, you're right. You can. I don't know if I would advise it.
No, but, you know, there's a lot of lawsuits. I saw as a police reporter, like, who told you this was a good idea? Did he have a TV commercial? You shouldn't have listened to
it. Fair.
Waving a hammer around in said TV commercial for those, especially for our Texas fans.
But yeah, I know some people feel a certain way. You know, Star City also canceled their upcoming events, by the way. So I want to make sure that's out there too. They made a public announcement about that. And some people are just being angry because, like, oh, this is the one event that's happening near me for the next X time or whatever. And it's like, dude, this ain't about you.
No.
Well, it's not even about the people that are going to the events even. It's about all the people those people may come in contact with.
Yeah.
And that's where it becomes an issue. You know, we're seeing stuff we haven't seen before. And we're all trying to kind of make the best decision as best we can with everything going on. And it's difficult. I genuinely feel for it. Like, normally I'm one of the guys saying, like, F these CEOs and blah, 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 you know, but.
He is. I can back him up on this.
But you know what? Like, right now, this is where you get to earn your money.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the real tough decisions where you have to sit in endless meetings, endless phone calls, and just really try to hammer down how to handle this.
E3 is canceled, which, you talk about a territory I never thought I would be in. As somebody that streams video games and writes about video games from time, that's just mind-blowing.
That's true. That's one of the biggest shows of the year.
Yeah. And there's two. Well, again, we think there's a new Xbox and a new PlayStation coming out this year. So it was going to be even bigger than your normal show because new consoles.
And we don't even know what this does for the next 4 or 5 months. Right? Like, let's say we at least get stuff under control. Let's call it 2 months from now. So let's say May. Right, sometime mid to late May, things are kind of still rough but manageable. That's still 2 months of business your local game stores didn't have, at least at their regular volume. Right, like that's 2 months of underproduced stuff coming from China, India, Malaysia, whatever. Right, so there's going to be a lot of things that are going to be different as we get into the second half of the year. Whether that's how events are run, how prizes are done. Hell, if your even local small business that you go play at stays open.
Yeah. I was just about to bring up, like, for some of these people, it didn't, you know, they're out for a couple of months. It's, you know, it's they couldn't afford to essentially have decreased business for 2 to 3 months.
Yeah, so it's a crazy time. So, you know, all I'm saying is, it's easy to be emotional when something like this is going down. Everybody's worrying about a lot. There's a lot of stress, understandably so. There's a lot of deep concern. But at least take a second. You know, do that whole thing where maybe you type something up, but you don't hit send.
Yeah.
You know, just think about it, delete it. Then if you still feel that way 2 hours from now, sure, then go ahead and post it. Because there's going to be a lot of things that are happening right now that none of us can predict. And some of it is people trying to minimize damage down the road. even more so than like handling something for today. And I don't know what else to tell people other than, yeah, it's going to suck for a while. I have a feeling this next month's probably going to be pretty rocky for a lot of reasons for a lot of people, even more so than these past 3 or 4 weeks have been. I mean, I wish there was better news, but I mean, this is just what we're dealing with. Another event that we've been promoting, the Hunter Burton Memorial Open. I've been keeping in touch with them, obviously, because as I've mentioned, I'm going to be doing commentary there. And it's a charity I really like to work with and support. As of Tuesday, I had spoken with the operators and they were still going to host the event, which is being hosted in Texas in the Dallas area. As of now, I believe we only have 7 or 8 confirmed cases throughout all of Texas. But while we're actually recording here in the next 10 minutes or so, no, it'd be about 15 minutes. They're actually going to have some type of conference call, so I will be stepping away to do that. We'll have a break in the recording, and I'll probably just come back with some breaking news. Either yes, it's going to keep going, or no, it's not, and the reasons why on either direction. So that's definitely something it's developing news, I guess, if you want to call it that.
Daquan is so good. He brings breaking news. Who breaks news on a podcast? Daquan Watson, that's who.
It's honestly, I have my hands in too many things and I know too many people. That's all that means.
He's also very modest.
Now, I wish I could take some type of journalistic credit for that, but it's just coincidental timing where everything worked out the way it did.
I will, but since he won't, I will take journalistic credit for it.
Well, hey, we hadn't had that wonderful sound in a while. You know what that means? We actually have a guest this week. And this was somebody who was recommended to us, by the way, when I put out a request on Twitter. Had a bunch of people submit names and whatever people to have on the show. And somebody mentioned that Cardsphere is actually a 1/3 minority-owned business. And I thought, that's cool. So yeah. Why not have them on the show? So that 1/3 is here with us today, so we want to welcome Efren to the show. How are you doing, dude?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to being on the cast. I love you guys' show.
Thanks. Awesome. It's always cool when we get to bring people in who actually are already fans.
Yeah, I've been listening to you since you had Elizabeth Rice on, Ellie DeVille.
Yeah, yeah. Ellie is fun. For those of you that don't know, if you don't follow Ellie, go do it. Ellie is a wonderful follow.
Yeah, you really should. So she was on right after... I think it was only a day or two after we started sponsoring her. So it was, she said, I'm going to make an appearance here. And that's where we discovered you. So I've been glad to listen to you guys when I can.
Awesome. Yeah, she is on all the time. Yes. Like literally the personality doesn't turn off. But enough about Ellie. What about you? Like, how did you get started playing Magic?
So I got started playing Magic. My nephews kind of got me into it. This was back right around the time, right before Return to Ravnica dropped, or I think right like the week that it dropped was when I started playing. So my nephews had been playing for a while, and I knew about Magic, but I was, I guess, in denial about how nerdy I was because I liked comic books and I liked... Star Wars and, you know, science fiction, but I would see Magic and I would say, well, I'm not that nerdy. I don't understand the game.
You had all the signs, but you were in denial.
I was in denial, and my nephews would always try to get me into it. So one Christmas, we were just kind of sitting around. It was Christmas break. I think it was like a couple days after Christmas. And I said, you know what, let's go down to the comic book store and see what's going on. And we bought about $100 worth of Magic stuff. And then we also bought HeroClix because I hadn't played either. And I said, let's go home and try these. And we played HeroClix once, put it in a box and never opened it again. And I've been playing Magic ever since.
Well, you chose correctly.
I think so too. Yeah. Kind of took it around with it now that I have a business completely centered around it. So,
well, that's true. So what formats are you playing lately? I know obviously with Cardsphere, you probably have access to a lot of cards.
Well,
which way do you prefer to play Magic these days?
I pretty much, with Paper Magic, I only play Commander anymore. When I first started, I got really into Magic, and that was, you know, the standard set which was Return to Ravnica. I think it had Avacyn restored, you know, all the Innistrad and stuff, and then Core. I think that was Core 13 that year. And I got super into it, and I had, like, I think I had four different standard decks all at once, not realizing that rotation was a thing. And people would tell me, well, it's rotating, and, you know, and I didn't really know what that meant. And I was like, well, whatever, you know, I'll still have these cards, and I'll sell them or something. They'll still be worth what I paid for them. Very naive in that regard. So
yeah, I think everybody has that moment.
Yeah. And so that was, you know, and I only actually took apart those decks literally last week because I just had a sentimental attachment to them, but they rotated and I realized I couldn't play with them anymore. Like right when I think Cons came out, that was when it kind of rotated, and I was really soured to Standard. And right around that time I had heard about Commander, and I've pretty much only played Commander since then. On Arena, I played Standard until it wrote the first rotation, and then I kind of got irritated with it again. So I haven't played Arena since rotation. And it happened to me twice because I was in the beta and I had like so many cards that I had earned, and you used to be able to buy cards in the beta.
Yeah.
And then they rotated and they just kind of gave you packs or whatever. Or I forget what they did. They gave you gems or something. And I lost my deck, and then I spent the time grinding up and building a collection again, and then it rotated again. And, you know, I would play Brawl probably if it had more support on there. I don't really care
if you could play on any day other than just Wednesdays.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can do friendly challenges, and that's cool, but it's not, you know, you can't just hop in and hop to find a game. You know, that's what you want to do if you're playing at home. So I pretty much just play Commander now.
Okay. And why don't you tell us a little bit about you? Because as we found out off the air, we have a bit of a Texas connection going on today.
Yeah, I was surprised. I knew Brian was in Texas. So I'm in South Texas. And when I say South, like people from San Antonio, they say, I'm from South Texas. Well, I'm 230 or 40 miles south of that. I'm all the way down in the Rio Grande Valley, which I assume neither you would heard of, but I guess you're from pretty close by originally.
Yeah, I grew up about, well, I guess it's been about an hour and a half, 2 hours north of there. So
yeah. So, and when I first moved here, which was when I was a teenager, this was in the 90s. So I'm from California originally. I was right by where you were because I was in Kingsville. So then we moved from there.
Oh, yeah.
We went even further south. We said we got to go deeper into Texas. So yeah, we're right here on the Mexican border. I'm about 6 miles from Mexico, where I'm sitting now.
And I used to cover high school sports, so as the song goes, I've been everywhere, man.
So how would you say the Magic scene is down there? And like, do you see any difference with, like, you know, I guess with language barriers or players coming to and from Mexico or whatever?
The Magic scene down here, there's not really one central kind of shop, where there's like three shops. Some of them are better than others. But it's hard down here because pretty much they only play Standard. So it's not really for me. They'll have every once in a while have, you know, a day of the week, they'll say, come play Commander, come play Modern. But really all their support goes towards Standard. There's not really any other thriving meta down here besides Standard. So I don't really go into LGSs all that much. When I first started playing, I went into one a lot, and it ended up closing just because it was run by some really young kids, like in their very early 20s, and they didn't really, they were super nice, and they really helped me understand the game better. And so I gave them my full support until they ended up closing. It just wasn't to run very well, I guess. And since then, I really haven't had a place that felt like that. And since I don't play Standard anymore, I don't really get out to the shops much. I'll usually go and buy, if they have pre-release kits left over or something, I'll go by there. And I usually buy accessories there if I need sleeves or whatever. But I don't really play in LGSs because I'm really casual kitchen player, kitchen table type of Magic player. EDH, though, I have like, I don't know, I probably have like 30 different EDH decks. I really love building EDH decks and then never getting to play them because I have too many. But my friends will come over and they'll just pick a deck out of my box and we'll all play. So
I'm always impressed at y'all that can build all these decks, because I know some people have like for real 50 plus Commander decks and maybe only really play like five of them.
Yeah, I have one favorite for sure. I have a Taysa Orzhov Scion that I'm foiling out on Cardsphere, and the rest are like, you know, I have just kind of everything. I have a bunch of the retail decks, and you know, I do, you know, I'll buy the retail decks and I'll buy all the matching deck boxes, the matching sleeves, just because I like it to all look cool. And I have those. And then I like to build, you know, budget versions of decks and then kind of upgrade them a little bit, maybe make them worse by putting cards that shouldn't be there, but that I really like. And that's just kind of, that's the way I play Magic. You know, it's hard when you get older, because you got to get your play group together and everyone has, you know, responsibilities, and, you know, we try to get together. It tends to only happen about every 6 weeks, but lately we've been playing over Discord. Me and one of the guys from Cardsphere and some of the people we sponsor, some different friends from Discord, will get together and point our webcams at the table, and we've been playing that way. It's been working out great. It's been really fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, one other question is, having been in Texas and run a business down there for gaming, I know it can be difficult sometimes to get cards in different languages or get products in different languages. Like, do you see that issue down there at the border with there being, I'm assuming, a much larger Spanish-speaking community or whatever?
There is a lot. Pretty much everyone down here speaks Spanish. And it's been actually a lot more diverse since I've been down here. When I first moved down here back in the 90s, it was like, had to be 95%. You know, Hispanic or Mexican national, and then every other race was 5%. And there was, you know, you saw, you know, you never saw Asian people, you never saw Black people. So ever, you know, my mom, who, you know, I'm half Hispanic, so my mom was the only one, the only white people here. And so, but in Magic, really everyone here just plays with English cards. Now almost everyone here is English speaking or bilingual if they're playing Magic. So pretty much there's not really a high demand for Spanish cards still, and I think that's just because people prefer to have the English cards because I think it has more value.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes there'll be people that have, you know, the cards I see more are like, you know, Japanese cards or Russian foils kind of thing, you know, people trying to pimp out their decks or whatever.
Would you say that has that contributed to maybe some people learning more English or learning English better?
I don't think so. At least not any in okay. In my experience. But it could be. When I was in high school, there was kind of a Magic scene, and that's really the only time I was really around a lot of non-English speakers a lot. And they weren't really into the Magic, as I wasn't either, but that was when Magic was still very new. So I don't know that it's kind of complicated, although, you know, if you follow MTG Young Mage, who is Rhino, his dad, you know, he had trouble learning to read. So his dad used Magic as a tool, you know, taught him Magic to encourage reading, to help him learn to read. So I think that's probably true. I'm not sure if English as a second language, if that would be the same thing. It's kind of different when you're first learning and you're a child than learning when you're an adult. And I know from firsthand, because I didn't learn Spanish until I was an adult, so it was kind of difficult. So I wish I had a definitive answer, but I don't really know if people are using Magic in that way. I would love to know if they
do. Oh, no, that's totally fine. Like, that's still a good answer. well, unfortunately, don't have news I can break.
Oh, okay.
Which I had better news. There's still a lot of things developing. Okay. They were mostly just giving us a check-in on a few things. They will be making an announcement very soon, likely this weekend.
Okay.
But there's a lot of moving parts they are having to sort out before they make any more announcements. So
I can imagine.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And one of the things I want to point out for people too is that when we're talking about a charity event, especially when you have so many people volunteering and so many people donating, and you know, like, it's a whole different type of operation than just say somebody like Wizards just saying, okay, cool, this is what we're gonna do.
Yeah,
like, you are the company driving the ship and spending the money and making the money, you know. So it does change that a little bit. But to get back on track, why don't you tell us about Cardsphere and what you guys do over there, Efren?
So Cardsphere is primarily a trading platform. So if you want to trade your cards, if you have Magic cards and you want to turn them into other Magic cards, it might sound like a total shill, but Cardsphere is really the best place to do it. So, the other options, if you want to, you can go down and trade at your local game store, trade within your play group. But the biggest problem is when you're trading face to face and like binder to binder is the haggling, right? You have cards A and B, the other guy has card X, and you want that card, but he wants card Y and you don't have it. So there's not really a way to come to an agreement. You know, he might take your cards figuring maybe he can trade them later, but at the end, either someone's less happy than the other one or either nobody's happy. So Cardsphere, the way it works is you put your cards in that you have that you want to trade out. You enter all your inventory and then you just hit send. And it matches you with everybody that wants those cards. So there might be five different people that wants one of your cards and they're all offering a different price. And you can use our tools to see what the best price is. Or you can, maybe you more and more concerned about packing 10 cards in a single envelope, or you can arrange it that way. And so you just pick what cards you want and what cards you want to send out. And you just hit send and you mail them to whoever wants them. And while they're on the way, we take the funds out of their account until the card gets there. When the cards get there and they verify they're in the condition that you agreed on, that they're authentic and all that stuff, then they accept them and we put those funds in your account. Minus, if you're selling a card, there is a 1% fee, which is, I think there's no other site that has a lower fee structure than us. So yeah, so 1% is all we take if you're just trading cards and keeping your money in the site. So you can always just cash out and take your money out via PayPal. And we take, we do have a cash out fee, which is 10% or $10, whichever is greater. So usually people will try to wait till they have over $100 to cash out. But if you're just trading cards for cards, you only ever pay the 1%. So once you have that money in your account, you know, you have a list of cards that you want. As soon as you can afford the cards, other people can see that you want the cards and then they send them to you. There's no fee to receive the cards and they pay to ship them to you. So you can trade your cards for other cards while only paying 1% of the value. So if you're trading cards and you're switched, like you have one deck and you want to play another deck, there's not a less expensive way to do it than on Cardsphere. You do pay for your time because you got to take the time to package the cards out and mail them. But you know, if you sell them on TCG Player or eBay or whatever, you know, they have, you know, pretty massive fees, you know, they're in comparison to Cardsphere because you're paying like, you know, 15%, sometimes more depending on the value of the card. Because if it's a lower value, you pay a lot more because of the credit card fee or whatever. So you're paying a much bigger percentage of the value of the card on Cardsphere. So we eliminate the need to haggle. The other thing is because our fees are so low and there's not a lot of overhead to sell, if you just want to buy cards, they're less expensive on Cardsphere because, you know, when you go on a TCG Player or even an eBay or any place else, the sellers need to make a certain amount of money. They know the fees are there, so the cards are priced higher because of that. So you might say, well, you're telling me if I sell a card, I'm getting less money for it, which is true, but you have more buying power with that money because the cards are less. So if you're just going to buy cards and you say, I need five Thalias, you can just put some money with the credit card or debit card in Cardsphere and say, I want to pay, you know, $6 each. I don't know what Thalia is going for right now. It's $6 each for a Thalia. And whoever likes the price will send you the card. We have, you know, you can go on any card page and look at the cards and see what the last 10 transactions have been. And you can also look and see who's offering the most. So you can put the best offer out there or just kind of put your offer in with whatever the last 10 trades were and you'll get the cards. We've been doing pretty well. We've been open for about 3 years. We're closing on about 28,000 users and almost $4 million worth of cards traded.
That's pretty cool. You know, because I'm picturing, especially people that have a limited card pool or limited funds, being able to say, okay, I've played this commander deck for 6-9 months. It's kind of not really what I wanted it to be. Let me just put my whole commander list on there. I'll figure out what cards I don't have to build the new commander I want, and then possibly just turn that into another deck for maybe like $30 or something.
Yeah, so you just be the 1% and then whatever, you know, postage costs, but, you know, but you're saving the shipping fee, you know, people are going to send to you and you're not going to pay shipping back. So it's a great way to do that. And like I said, if you're just buying cards for a collection or to, you know, you want to foil out a deck like I'm doing with my Tasted deck that I mentioned earlier, it really is, you should give it a shot. We have a new user guarantee. So if you want to just put some money in and try it, see if you can get cards, as long as you're offering, you know, what the market, you know, offering in line with what the market of the card is. If you don't get it or you're unhappy, we refund you and we don't take any fees for cashing you out. We offer that to brand new users. So there's no risk to try it. It's great for like metas, like I was talking, that are small and there's only standard down here. So, you know, I go to a store and people have standard cards, but I'm a commander player, and you know, there's not a lot of Magic players down here because the population is not very big, and it really opens you know, the world up to be able to trade to you. So it's you know, it can be kind of confusing, you know, what I just explained. Sometimes people don't get it, and there have been sites like us in the past that didn't use real money, and they used, you know, fake points. Yeah, and that got really out of control for obvious reasons, and that's kind of how Archer started. So yeah, it's all money. Anytime you see money on the site, like right now, if you look on cards for it, there's $38,000 worth of cards in the mail right now, and that's all real money that users have deposited. It's 100% liquid. Cardsphere doesn't use any user money for operating costs or advertising or nothing. We pay for all that separate. So all the money in Cardsphere is 100% liquid. The entire user base could withdraw their money tomorrow and everyone will get their money.
That's really cool. I mean, it's definitely running it a bit different than the other companies. We won't name names that have done it before. Yeah. So it's really cool to see that. And I imagine y'all probably have some power users that probably trade and do a bunch of stuff local and then shove stuff on Cardsphere to try to move it or find other things of more value to trade locally. I mean, I could see a lot of ways your site could be used.
Yeah, we have power traders. We have casual traders. There's a lot of shops. You know, if your listeners have a shop and you have dead inventory or, you know, when I used to trade before Cardsphere, this was back when I told you I first started playing Commander. So there wasn't anything really like it. So it was Deckbox, which Deckbox is still around, and they've got great collection management, but you're doing that haggling just online, right? And it's the same thing. People want you, if you're trading up, which they call, you know, let's say I have a Shockland and you want it, but you have, you know, Path to Exiles, you got to give me a whole playset. You know, you got to give me $25 worth of card for a $17 or $15 Shockland, because they say you're trading up and I'm trading down, so you have to give me more value. So there's that haggle there, right? And the other one that I used was Magic Online Traders League, which was just really a very highly customized forum. It's basically just an internet forum, and people would trade there. And I ran into a shop, and I was building my very first commander deck, which was my Tasa deck, and he said, my meta only cares about standard. He goes, so give me standard cards, I'll send you anything you want. So I got a lot of cards from him, but I was very lucky, you know. So if you're a shop or, you know, your play group wants to play a certain type and there's not those cards in the area, you can get them on Cardsphere. You can just send out the cards that are worthless to you and get the stuff you like. We have quite a few shops on Cardsphere that do just that.
I think that's very cool because you've opened up a market where, you know, say I buy a collection locally and there's cards that I don't necessarily want to sell to, say, a local vendor or even, say, online to a vendor because I don't like their buy price. But I don't necessarily need full retail price for it. I can put it up for a couple dollars more than buy price and somebody's going to get a great deal. I still move the card and get something else I want.
Yeah, and everyone wins because our prices tend to hover between buy list, above buy list, but, you know, below a TCG price. So it's right kind of in the middle where you're going to get more than sending to a buy list a lot of times, but you're not going to get as much as TCG before the fees. Right. So it exists in the middle, and it's very nice. As far as the type of players that are on Cardsphere, we have all types. And you know, mentioned, you know, I want to send these cards out that I have. People love to go and draft or do a pre-release and then come home and mail all the cards out on Cardsphere, because then they're able to recoup some of that value. And then, you know, they save that up and get whatever cards they want, or that they turn that into a standard deck or something. So it's great to get rid of your draft chaff. If you take the time to put in the commons and the basics and stuff, you have a lot of people that buy that stuff on Cardsphere. And that's the kind of stuff that you can't sell anywhere because it's considered bulk anywhere else that you try to send it in.
And do you have, or I guess, I mean, you do have some, I'm sure, but how many issues would you say you run into, I don't know, on a monthly basis, where people just don't send the cards or some other weird customer service issue like that?
So Cardsphere is run by three people. So we run it in our part times. We all have full-time jobs. I'm in Texas. The other two owners are in, which are Ted and Michael, are in Canada. Michael is our developer. Me and Ted share the customer service and community manager kind of duties. So I see, you know, between him and I, between the two of us, we see all of the customer service issues that come through. So most of the customer service conflicts are having to do with grading, because it's completely subjective, sure, right? A card that's near mint to you, to somebody else, they want it. You know, we don't support mint. We don't support gem mint cards and Cardsphere. We tell people, if you're coming here looking for, you know, a card that you're going to send in and get a PSA 10 grading on it, you know, we don't support that, because it's, first of all, there's no real pricing for it, right? All the pricing is near mint. And second, you know, cards, you know, you can pick apart just about any card and try to find a flaw with it, if you look hard enough. Most of the service issues we have are related to condition, you know, and sometimes, you know, in fact, I just did today, because I was looking for a Watery Grave, and somebody sent me a Watery Grave, and they had listed as moderately played. And I looked at it, and there's like one little, you know, speck wrong with the border on the back of the card. And I said, hey, man, this is a, and I picked up this behavior from our users, because I've seen in customer service someone say, hey, you sent me this card as moderately played, but this is a near mint card, and I want you to have the near mint value. So that's the same thing I did. I said, you should have the near mint price for this card, and I gave it to him. But most of it's with that, and it's not that people are intentionally misgrading the cards. It's just that it's the most subjective thing ever, and there's always a discrepancy with that. So that's our biggest customer service issue. As far as people not sending the card or that kind of thing, because we're, you know, me and Ted are the owners, and we do all the customer service, and we have kind of stats and everything we can see in the background. And once we get a bad actor on Cardsphere, it becomes really obvious right away. Because anytime someone disputes a transaction, as soon as we open it, we can see everything the user has done, all their past disputes, all what their rate of not sending is, how long it takes them to send, you know, pretty much anything you'd want to know. So it becomes pretty obvious right away when someone's behaving that way. And in our early days, we had a lot of, there was a lot of animosity between us and users of the other site that we're talking about. So, and every once in a while, we still get it. People will sign up, commit a ton of cards, and then just leave. And, you know, they never had the cards. Wow. They're just going on there to cause problems for us. But we've learned to identify it pretty quick. So, we come across that, and you know, the biggest feel bad thing is, you know, a card gets lost in the mail or damaged on the way. And, you know, we've learned that really, most people are honest that are online trading Magic. And, you know, a lot of times if you're trading in the US, we give the card a total of 3 weeks to arrive there. And, you know, sometimes, you know, the card doesn't arrive, and they say, you know, when it happened just last week, and the guy says, okay, yeah, I know what you're doing, pal. You know, you're trying to scam me out of my card. Enjoy the free card. You know, he told the receiver, you know, which we talked to the guy. He said, you know, listen, you're taking a risk when you're putting a card in the mailbox that it might not get there. You know, the mail service is not made to handle a Magic card inside a top loader going through the mail sorter. You know, sometimes it gets lost or gets damaged. And sure enough, about 10 or 15 days later, that user emailed us and said, hey, the card showed up. You know, can you refund the guy, you know, give him his credit? We went back and gave him, and he was super apologetic. And that happens with most of our lost mail trades. Most of them just are delayed and they show up. We had one that's the craziest one ever. it was mailed in like October or something of last year, and it showed up about 2 weeks ago.
Whoa!
And it had gone to, and he had received it and said, "I can't believe," he goes, "what this is," but he sent me a picture of it, and so it had been sent to Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam for some reason. And someone there put "return to USA." This was sent. They have a stamp that said this. Accidentally sent to Ho Chi Minh City, return to United States. So I guess it happens a lot. But so it went all the way to Vietnam and then came all the way back and eventually made it to the receiver.
Wow.
Dog, that's probably the most amazing thing. So, you know?
Yeah, really. Like, yeah. You know, they find the dogs like hundreds of miles
away. I've had stuff get there like 4 months later, but I don't think I've had anything come anything close to a year.
Yeah, so that is really crazy. So that's our main service issue. You know, we had recently had a user that tried to run a bit of a scam, and we're actually in the process of speaking with law enforcement because he basically got a bunch of fakes and sent them out. But because we hold the money, we don't release the money to anybody until the card gets there and the people verify. We caught him right away. And no one's ever really tried to do that before. He basically had just a set that he bought from one of these bootleggers and sent every single one out. And it that, you know, we know the lists that are out there. We kind of keep our eye on that kind of thing. So that becomes pretty obvious to us also. And we can see when it's going on. So we're able to catch it before even most of the users had received the cards. And we messaged them and said, "Hey, when you get the card, you know, it's our policy that if someone sends you a fake, you destroy the card to make it not tournament legal. So they clip off a corner, punch a hole through it." I said, "As soon as you get it, we know it's going to be fake. Send us a picture of the card, you know, destroy it, and we'll refund you your money." but other than that, we haven't really had a big problem with counterfeits. We've had some people that have had them for a while and didn't even know, you know, that has come up. And, you know, it's pretty obvious. You can see from when you get a user's entire, like a picture of all their behavior, you can see pretty easily who is being honest and who's trying to pull a fast one. So.
Well, yeah, and that's what I was thinking. Like, the way your system's set up, if somebody were to set up an account, have all these expensive cards, within the matter of, like, 10 to 14 days, they send out 15 cards, you know, and then a couple people are getting them, and they're like, "Hey, this isn't a real Magic card." And they don't even get the money because it's in the escrow account, effectively.
Like, right.
It's such a bad scam to try to run on your site.
It is a bad scam. It's short-sighted. And then, you know, if you cash out, you know, you can cash out on CardSphere. It's not a automatic process for a couple of reasons. So one is that anytime somebody requests a cash out, we do a review of their account. We go and we look and make sure there's no disputes. And we look at all their trades going out, make sure there's no suspicious. We pull up all the stats before we'll release the money. And the second is that because, you know, PayPal is kind of notorious for, you know, everyone's heard horror stories of PayPal. PayPal just locked my account and I can't get my money out. And you got to go through this whole process. So we don't keep the funds, user funds, in PayPal. You know, we keep it in a bank. And when someone requests a cash out every week, we transfer the money out of a bank into PayPal. And it only sits in PayPal for a short time. And then it gets sent to the user just in case anything happened and we weren't able to get into PayPal. All the money is safe in an actual bank. So it's really hard to pull a counterfeit card scam on CardSphere because you're so far removed from the money until you get through all those checks and balances that it just really, you know, you're better off doing it on eBay or something.
Man, I need an applause button on my soundboard. Like
I appreciate that.
It's great. I dig it. I now need to go set up an account on CardSphere.
Yeah, you should, you know, try, you know, even if you're just buying cards, you know, I keep telling people there's no less expensive place to buy cards. Even if you just want to get your feet wet that way.
Cool. Well, with that out of the way, how about we get into five fire questions?
Sure.
Our guests tend to be very sharp, but let's see how they respond when we put their feet to the fire in five fire questions. So the way this works is I get to ask you three pretty serious questions or tough questions, and then Brian, being our comedic guy on the host, he's going to ask you two that are a little more lax to bring you down and get us back down to some levity.
All right, this sounds fun. Let's do it.
So first one, I'm going to hit you hard on this first one.
Okay.
Who is your favorite content creator among the content creators that you sponsor?
This one is somewhat, it's not that hard. We have a a young woman we sponsor named Pixie Kitten Plays.
And that is brilliant name.
Pixie Kitten Plays. So she makes primarily comedy, sketch comedy videos. And she really appeals, you know, we try to sponsor kind of a whole array of different creators that appeal to different audiences, you know, Spikes and Timmy's and Grinders and Casuals. And she's, because I'm casual, she's very much casual. She's very new to Magic, and she's still in, you know, she's only been playing for like a year. And she's real into that, you know, when you first start playing Magic and you're in the discovery phase and every card you look at is so cool and you can't wait to play with it. Crawlworm
is awesome.
Yeah. So so she's in that phase, and she likes that, and she doesn't really aspire to be the best Magic player. She likes playing casually and playing that way. And so her videos, I recommend anyone who wants a good laugh to check out her comedy videos. They're really funny and, you know, self-deprecating. She's casual and she knows it. And I really enjoy her stuff.
Cool. Second question. What is the worst trade you have ever made?
The worst trade of, does it have to be a Magic card?
No, actually, I was thinking it was going to be Magic, but if it's not, that's also acceptable.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever made a really bad Magic trade. I've kind of done the thing where I trade cards away right before they kind of blow up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's kind of happened to her. You can't really avoid that. Oh, sure. You're kind of really, really super into the meta, and you kind of predict that thing. But every once in a while, a card will just explode. In fact, okay, here's the worst one. I sent my business partner, Ted, the Mikosynth Lattice, like a week before it went from $13 to like $40 or $50.
Oh,
like,
man.
By the time it got to him, it had like quadrupled in price. So that's probably my worst Magic trade. That happens to me a lot, though.
That's funny.
Yeah, I'm very much casual. Yeah, that's probably the best answer.
And then my last question is, what do you envision, or what would you like to have happen for Cardsphere in, say, the next like 2 years?
The next 2 years. So Cardsphere, you know, I would really like, obviously, to have more users on Cardsphere. Cardsphere, you know, obviously the goal of when you're owning a business, you know, you would love to be able to do it full time, that kind of thing. And I guess that's a distant, that's a long-term goal for Cardsphere. I really wish that we had more reach and people were more aware of us, just because I think we provide a really valuable service. It's an ethically run service. And I think a lot of people are put off by the, you know, it's kind of difficult to understand. When you look at it, and we still get people, you know, we have videos and we have tutorials on the site that teach you kind of how to use it, and people still say, how come I can't just come on here and buy the card I want? So I hope that there's a way that we can on-ramp users kind of more gracefully. The other thing is something that we're just starting to work on, and that's offering the other side of the coin, and that's offering a direct marketplace, a place to actually sell the cards while still maintaining a much lower a fee structure than the other guys. So that was something we actually started working on last year, but you know, we started planning, you know, we're in the very early stages, and we were talking to people, you know, creators that we know, shop owners we know, what do you need on a site that's going to compete with a TCG player or you know, wherever. And you know, and right when that happened, Wizards started ramping out all these weird products and the Mythic Editions and the you know, now it's Secret Lairs and, you know, all these special editions, and that our tools on the back end to index these cards had a lot of difficulty, because, you know, like the Secret Lair series, for example, you had four cards in there named Serum Vision, right? And the way we had it, you couldn't have the same card outside of Basics and the same card in the same set with the exact same name. And, you know, even the promo pack cards they have that are the exact same, you know, they have the same set number, they have the same, you know, the same name, the same rarity. They're still like, you know, a Guilds of Ravnica won't be a Guilds of Ravnica. The only difference is it has that little silver stamp on it. And so there wasn't a way for us to distinguish the card. So all our development for the last 6 months or so has gone towards accommodating that. But in, you know, we finally got most of the tools in place to be able to handle, because it doesn't look like it's slowing down all these specialty products.
And yeah, and I want to actually say to the listeners that, you know, I got to experience that being at Card Kingdom. I still have a friendly relationship with some people over at Star City. And as that was coming to be, you know, we were finding out that some cards were going to have like seven versions or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it was a nightmare.
And I mean, it really was challenging.
I think for the average player, that's something that goes kind of unnoticed because you're just like, oh yeah, sure, I'll just find the version I want and I'll just go buy it. But like,
yeah. And for us, it was really hard because our users, you know, we're very accessible. You know, we're on, you know, you found us on Twitter, but we're on Discord all the time. You know, we're lucky where, you know, Michael's a programmer and Ted is also, he works in a service role in computers also. And I'm an IT manager. So we're able to kind of always be on Discord. So you can get a hold of an owner of cards here at any time of day, pretty much, unless all three of us are asleep. So it was like, when are these cards going to be added? How come you haven't, you know, what's going on? This card has already been out for, you know, and we're trying to explain them. There's not a way our site can't handle four different versions of the same card with the exact same set number and the exact same name. It wasn't, you know, that wasn't a thing that existed. Excuse me. It wasn't a thing that existed until just now. So, you know, I apologize. And we kind of cut our teeth on being very agile. When the first couple of years we launched, you know, people would ask for features and we would just bang them out. And that's what our philosophy wanted to be. We wanted to, you know, launch small and be agile. And this kind of slowed down all our development in the last 6 months or so. So going back to your question, where would I like it to? I would like to get back on track, you know, getting some more features especially for our premium users who have been very generous to support us. We do have a premium service. It's a couple of dollars a month for, you know, some extra features. And that's geared towards pro level people who want to trade and make profit. You know, we don't paywall off any essential features for trading. It's just like quality of life improvements. So I would like to get back to adding more value to that and try to get back. And within 2 years, I really hope we can launch an actual marketplace. We're still back where we were, which is in the very early just planning stages and finding where we want to go with it. But I would be disappointed if in 2 years we hadn't got there.
Okay. Cool. Well, Brian, why don't you hit him with your two questions?
All right. Number one, if you were a magic card, what do you do? What kind of card are you?
If I'm a magic card, I am definitely an Orzhov card. I started playing, I was a green player and a Selesnya player. And ever since I first played with, and I keep talking about Taze, it's my favorite deck. I just love black and white. So I don't want to say I have an aristocrats kind of theme, but I guess I would want to be some kind of, you know, I would settle with being a mono black that has a free sack outlet because they don't print a lot of those. So I would love to be a free sack outlet with some kind of recursion like Wolstrad.
I love how quickly he came with it and how specific he got. That was awesome. It's like he's thought about this a little bit before.
Yeah, I'm a certain type of player.
This one is probably not necessarily funny, but I saw one of my heroes, Dan Rather, ask it, and it's such a good question, I totally stole it. If you could live 1 year in your life over again, which year is it and why?
If I can live one life of my year over again, I think I getting a little deep here? So when my little sister turned 21, this was, I think this was in 2008 or in 2009. We went to Las Vegas to celebrate her birthday. And you know, my then girlfriend, who's now my wife, was with us. And it was probably the time of my life. I've never had a better time than, you know, my little sister who who had been away to college. She went to UCLA and had clearly, you know, she was very religious and very straight-laced. She was valedictorian, and it hit clear that it was not her first time drinking. So I really liked that, actually. And we had a great time on Fremont, and I would love to relive that. She actually, that was the last time I was ever with her, because she came down with a brain tumor and later passed away. She was in a coma and later passed away. So if I could relive anything, it would definitely be that time. That's my favorite time of my life.
That is a hell of an answer, man.
Can't argue with any of that.
Cool. With the questions out of the way, I think it's time to have a seat at the dinner table.
Oh, great. I brought that Chinese food you guys wanted.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. So, yeah, so this week we actually have... Actually, I'll just read it. I had a listener who happens to be a soldier. He's stationed overseas, but he's from Tacoma. And we purposely talked about not using his name, so there's no hate or anything else that comes with this potentially he may have to deal with. But we thought it would be more appropriate to have kind of a roundtable conversation about it and pay it a little more attention. But what he sends me, he says, "Hey, Daquan, I just wanted to say I appreciate the Color of Magic series. A couple of facts about me. I'm currently deployed overseas in the military. I'm a Tacoma native. I'm biracial, black, white. I've always felt a little out of place when I sit across from an opponent and they confirm his last name. I'm not going to give his last name, but they're confused because it's a very generic white sounding last name and he doesn't present that way. And then he gets the immediate sense of cockiness when they see him sitting across the table from them and almost like they're expecting it to be an easy or free win. He says, by no means am I a Patrick Chapin, but I can hold my own and constructed. You know, the bottom line is I appreciate the support and the time it takes to bring the light our often rarely mentioned community. Take care. Look forward to more podcasts." And, you know, we talked a little bit about it off the air that, like, we've kind of all seen something like this happen. You know, whether it's magic or not, like, it's very silly to just look at an opponent and just assume, oh, yeah, I got this. You know, because I've literally seen, like, I've said it before on the show. I mean, I've been in an FNM where one of the 9-year-olds went 4-0. You know, but there have been people who walked away from the table mad that they lost to this kid, not realizing this kid actually has been trying to learn hard and playing the same deck for, like, 3 months. And, you know, they come over and complain about it. I'm like, well, yeah, the kid's good, whatever. You know, like, get over yourself. And I couldn't imagine, and maybe it's because, you know, I'm non-white or whatever, but I couldn't imagine sitting down across the table from somebody and looking, going, oh, because they're whatever race, they're probably just bad at magic. That just seems so weird. But I don't know, like, how do you guys feel about it?
I mean, as somebody that has had my butt whooped multiple times by 10-year-olds on my stream, I know way, if I didn't know before, I know now not to make that assumption.
Yeah, I've been beaten by every type of person you can imagine, especially when I first started, so I never sit down and assume I can trounce anybody, so I'm surprised that there are people that can make that assumption. I mean, I don't know how anyone could do that, but I guess
especially when it's based on race, because I guess you're assuming lower intelligence. And man, I don't even want to.
I've literally had somebody, like, and I don't think he even realized I was listening, but, you know, pass by him, and literally he was like, "Well, I'd be 4-0 if I didn't lose to the one black guy in the room." And I was like, "Dude, what does that even mean?"
Where are you?
Well, yeah, I'm just like, I mean, it's one thing if you're just using it as a descriptor, like my one loss was to this black dude or whatever, and I think he's the only black guy in the room, which would be an accurate statement, and I probably wouldn't care as much. But to just be like, oh, yeah, I'd be undefeated if the one black guy didn't beat me. You know, like what?
What you talking about, man? Where are you? We need you to clarify where you're going. Or maybe we don't. You know, you just don't.
Yeah, exactly. Don't clarify. I think we know where it's going. But yeah, I think it's tough, you know, because a lot of what we talk about is a lot of things that people experience, whether it's, you know, racial, gender, you know, disabilities, whatever. There are a lot of people who look at that and just go like, oh, well, I have an advantage for whatever made up reason in their head. And unless I'm in, like, I don't know, running a 100-meter dash against somebody on crutches, like, I have no reason to just know or believe that I have an advantage at whatever we're doing, you know? it's just such a weird place to be. I'm trying to sit here and think of, like, what was the last time I actually was doing something competitive and, like, just looked at an opponent and was just like, oh no, I got this. But, like, unless I've actually interacted with them previously, I don't think I've had that thought about somebody new that I just didn't have any intel on.
Bizarre. It's one thing if, like, okay, you feel like it's a good matchup for your deck or something. I can understand that.
Yeah, sometimes I'll be very confident about my deck and I'll say, oh, this deck can't be beaten, and I've been beaten.
Absolutely.
I've never just based on looking at someone sitting across from me. That's
you crazy. Look bad at Magic. Yes. I don't know how that works. It's just...
it's just such a weird mindset. It's such, like, it's very low-level thinking, because it's almost like you set yourself up for failure at whatever that activity is. Because the minute that person starts to out-compete you, you're going to start putting a lot of extra stress on yourself for no reason.
Yeah, you've lost the mental game when that happens.
Yeah, like you've convinced yourself, oh, I already got this. And, like, when the wheels start falling off, like, you're not going to know what the hell to do, because you haven't put yourself in the best position to treat them like an equal.
And you haven't thought about, like, okay, how many obstacles did they overcome to get to the point where they are?
Yeah, even more so. So in Magic terms, like, if you're in, like, round 7, 8, 9, 10, and you're in the X1 bracket, then I'm just assuming you've kicked everybody else's ass too. Like, I don't know who you are or what deck you're playing, but I'm assuming you're either doing a damn good job or you've gotten extremely lucky. Either way, you've earned your seat just as well as I have. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's different, I guess, when you're playing video games and you don't know who's on the other side and you're just trash talking, being an idiot. Like, that's one thing. But, like, when you're sitting across from somebody and you actually know who the opponent is, and you're still acting that way and making assumptions, like, I got no love for you, man. You're just a bad person. Yeah.
And sometimes it's not even, it's not even the assumption of, like, oh, okay, I'm going to win this. Some people assume that you have, even at Friday Night Magic, that you have, you both have the same goal. Your goal is to make the most competitive deck ever. No, and at Friday Night Magic, it's not necessarily the case.
That's a fair point, too. Like, they may just be competing for something different. Like, I've actually gone to a tournament just to try out a new deck, just to see if I even want to move forward with it. So, I'm like, yeah, sure. I'm trying certain things and sideboarding certain cards in just to see what the outcomes are in a low-stakes situation. So, that's going to have a different output,
or
too,
sometimes I've, been streaming all week, not gotten out of the house. I take what is essentially a glorified starter deck up there just because, hey, I want some actual social interaction. But yes, I know this is a terrible deck. I'm just here to hang out.
When I first started playing Magic, I remember the shop I would go to. There was this girl there, and I was still new. And she would just beat me every time because I think she had, like, Falcon Wrath the Aristocrat or something that was protection from humans. And then I had just had humans in my deck. And I tried so many times. I was like, I'm going to do it this time. And she just trounced me every time. And so I can't imagine sitting across from somebody and saying, I'm going to beat them, because whatever, they're a girl or whatever. I would definitely, I love the deck. And I was naive enough to say, I can do it. I didn't make any changes to it. I would sideboard the same cards in and try again. And it just, every time she landed that card, it was over. But yeah, I'm definitely not going to spike the tournament. I'm just going to do what my deck is supposed to do. And even if it doesn't work, really.
And I think that's a big part to a lot of what we're doing with the show. What effort we're seeing from Wizards with some of the stuff they're doing is creating more opportunities for people in all these different groups, whatever they are, to be present, be seen, or whatever, and kind of normalize a lot of it. So you take away those opportunities for people to just go, oh, well, I don't know. I'm trying to even get my head around what the logic, like, I don't know, maybe, well, that many black people don't play Magic, so he must not be that good, or whatever. But if we start seeing more people of color just on or in the MPL or whatever, or even in the Rivals League, and they're on coverage more often, then it starts to become more of a normal thing, I think. And some of that starts to go away. But some of it's just having to have the opportunity to be able to be in front of everybody.
And like we've talked about, everybody, you know, that's in the room playing, and that's a black person or Hispanic or a woman, they've had that person tell them, like, that's not for you. Black people don't play Magic. What are you doing? And they've gotten it from people black and white. So the fact that they're still in the room, yeah, but you pay attention. They've put up with a lot to get to where they're at.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do get a lot of flack from multiple angles. And if you've decided to stick with something through all that, like, you've kind of already had your trial by fire. So you're worth something to be there, you know? But yeah, I think we're all on the same page. I think the lesson here is just, like, don't make assumptions. You don't know somebody's story. You don't know their history. If you have no other information on them, just treat them like an equal. Also, thanks to our soldier, who I'm sure is likely listening, who wrote that very nice comment. And it also brought up something to me, too, because we have several listeners that I see, because I kind of track where our listeners are coming from or whatever, and we have some in different parts of the world. And I kept thinking, like, why do we have, like, 10 downloads this week from, like, I don't know, random non-English speaking place? And I started to realize, like, oh, some of those might actually be soldiers. And I hadn't even crossed my mind. So anyway, Efren, why don't we tell everybody how they can find you on social media?
You could find, if you're interested in Cardsphere, you could find us at cardsphere.com. Our Twitter handle is actually at realcardsphere, because there was, when we tried to register, there's actually some kind of Japanese Yu-Gi-Oh or something, that like a vaporware kind of thing, that they, and we couldn't get Twitter to give us the handle. So we're at realcardsphere and cardsphere.com. Our subreddit is cardsphere. If you're looking for me, I have my own personal Twitter that I kind of, Ted, my business partner, runs the main Cardsphere thing. He tweets out the blog entries and stuff and interacts with people there. My other personal one is from my YouTube channel that I kind of just post once a month. It's just Pack on my videos. So you can find me at Pack Crack Fever. And I post mostly talking Magic and opening packs sometimes. Right. That's what I like to do.
Cool. Brian, where can they find you?
I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. And also I have Alan's Ever After, which is our family channel on YouTube.
And as usual, you can find me at Power Dragon, PowerDragn, at almost everywhere. And the big thing I'm pushing this week is check out the latest video that, by the time you listen to this, will have been live probably like 12 hours. To send to your friends and your game stores to make sure everybody is staying healthy and safe through this kind of ordeal we're dealing with. But on that, that's it. I want to say thank you to Efren for coming and telling us about Cardsphere. That was actually really awesome. So thanks for coming and hanging out.
Thank you for having me. It was a great time being here. I really love what you guys are doing.
Cool. And to everybody else, whenever you're listening, wherever you're listening from, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.